big week in news developments, especially on the political front. We're going there now in Week in Review. Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. He joins us. Welcome to you, Steve.
Good morning, and happy National Donald Duck Day to everyone.
There you go. Really. And Eugene Kane is a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Eugene, welcome to you.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Well, we've been spending the last entire hour talking about James Comey's testimony, and there is lots to dissect, lots to talk about, and wanting to give you two a chance to weigh in. Let's start with you first, Eugene. What did you take away from Comey's testimony yesterday?
I kind of mixed reactions because he continued the same tactic as some of the other people who appeared before the panel the day before, claiming that there's stuff I could talk about, but I can't talk about it, you know, in an open session. I got to wait till a closed session. I think Americans tuning in for the hearing, they get frustrated when they hear that stuff. But I do think he was pretty forceful in terms of making his case that he thinks the president of the United States is a liar, and basically his basic description of the pressure he felt Trump was putting on him to end or to kind of wave away the investigation into Michael Flynn, I mean, that was pretty outlandish stuff. So in terms of transparency, that was a very incredible look into how this president operates behind the scenes. So even though he still insists that, well, there's some stuff I can't talk about, I get a feeling that if you get him behind closed doors, he has a lot more to talk about, this president.
Steve, were there any bombshells to you? Oh, can you hear us, Steve?
Oops. Oh, he must have that faulty equipment again.
Yeah, there we go. Steve must have dropped off for a moment. Well, you know, Eugene, going back to you, Comey was asked why he took detailed notes after his meetings with President Trump, something he didn't do while serving under President Obama. He noted that. He said subject matter and circumstances were two factors that led him to take the notes. But he also added this. Let's take a listen.
And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
It's a pretty blunt assessment. What do you make of this comment?
Well, I mean, wow, that says it all. He served under presidents who apparently he trusted enough not to cover his back with memos, but there is something about this Trump guy, I guess, just kind of moved him to, well, I better have all my bases covered. I think as a block, I don't think in annals of American history, and I'm not prone to hyperbole. Well, yes, I am, but I won't do it this time. But I think in the annals of presidential history, I can't remember when the FBI director ever made such a damning statement about the sitting president of the United States. The guy's a liar. I couldn't trust him.
And Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great, great.
He's back. Oh, wow. I was having so much fun.
Well, I want to get your take on yesterday. What did you see that just stuck out to you?
Well, I'm happy that Eugene doesn't want to go into hyperbole because, as you know, exaggeration is a billion times worse than understatement. But, you know, I think that, number one, this is one of those instances where really, literally, everybody looks bad. James Comey is not this pillar of rectitude that Democrats appear to want to make him out to be. Trump, I think we pretty much know at this point, has kind of a strained relationship with the truth, to say the least, or at least his interpretation of the truth of certain things. But what we heard yesterday, you there?
Yep, we're here.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting weird static over here. But basically what we heard, I don't think is going to change anybody's mind about how they feel about Trump. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it's not really clear that anything that he did, including asking Director Comey to stop the investigation into Flynn, is actually illegal. You have to go look at the federal statute, which I guess is 18 U.S. Code 1505, which has a broad-out definition of obstruction of justice, and I'm not sure that what Trump did really is definable as obstruction of justice. Was it a good idea? No. Is it obvious that sometimes he does things he shouldn't? No. But he does have the authority to give input into the Department of Justice. He also, I have to point out, you know, if Comey decided that a prosecution was warranted, he would have the ability to pardon Michael Flynn. And as we all know, he has the ability to fire the FBI director. There is, once again, a difference between something that is a good idea and something that's illegal. And when you have people like Alan Dershowitz, who does know something about the law, whether or not you like his conclusions, and, you know, an assistant U.S. attorney, Andrew McCarthy, both say this is not obstruction of justice. Well, I tend to think that whether you approve of what he did or not, it's not obstruction of justice.
Let's take a caller now, Craig in Onalaska. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. I think at this point in time, I'm going to rely on Comey's testimony, and the reason for that is he's testifying under oath. If the administration had nothing to hide, I think they would be clamoring to have their people testify before Congress. If they had the tapes that the president has alluded to, they would have had those out the second that Comey finished testifying. And the fact that they have not and are not willing to testify leads me to believe that there is something that they're trying to hide. And I think a little bit of evidence of that is when the intelligence people testified the other day, they refused to testify and answer basically a couple of simple questions. So I think there is smoke, and I think there's going to be more fire.
Eugene?
Well, again, if this doesn't pass a smell test, we're not really. We are discussing whether or not they'll ever get an obstruction, technically an obstruction of justice charge against whomever, but my attitude is that this is about a smell test for American voters. And the president calling the FBI director into a private room and then giving him that, well, I'd really appreciate it. It'd be nice if you let Flynn go. I think the senator from California, Kamala Harris, who is also a trial attorney, said something to the effect of the robber has a gun on you and says, well, I suggest you hand over your money or give me your money. Just because he framed it in a real polite way doesn't mean his intent isn't to intimidate you and coerce you. I thought that was a perfect analogy. Steve probably doesn't.
Steve, what lawmaker reactions stuck out to you?
Which lawmaker reaction? Well, I am not sure that any of them really did. And the reason is because, you know, as you sit there, it seems like it's all scripted out. I didn't get to watch this particular part, but apparently John McCain asked a question that was literally indecipherable. Nobody knew what it was he was trying to ask. I think that the answer, you know, the questions were all scripted, and depending on whether there's an R or a D, and ultimately, I'm not sure that there was any question that was there that particularly really matters very much. It is interesting to note that people who are supporters of Trump, and I am only a situational supporter of him. I didn't vote for him, but there are millions of people who did. And I don't think their opinion has changed about this. Gene talks about it being, you know, about what are the voters going to say. Well, through the crazy 6 months or so that Trump has been in office, I guess 5 months that Trump has been in office, it is interesting to note that his support really among his voters, people who voted for him, really has not dropped. It's dropped maybe like a total of 2%. And I don't think, based on what I read online from the reactions to Comey yesterday, I don't think this changes anybody's mind. It didn't seem to change the mind of the people who were asking the questions. And so it's, you know, what's that Shakespeare phrase, full of sound and fury signifying, I wouldn't say nothing, but not a whole lot in the minds of voters.
Steve quoting Shakespeare here. Carrie on Facebook says, it's interesting that the Republican senators criticize Comey for not standing up to President Trump. Eugene?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's very ironic seeing how none of them have ever stood up to President Trump. And I can understand. Comey did a good job of putting some blame on himself, essentially saying that he didn't have the backbone to stand up to Trump. And I think at one time he even suggested he didn't do the right thing with Loretta Lynch. So that's why I thought his testimony was compelling, scripted or not, because he basically kind of unburdened himself with a lot of emotions, feelings that I think really rang true. This is not about persuading all the people who voted for Trump that they made the wrong choice. I think daily that becomes more evident. That's all the other people who will play a factor in this, who are part of this large disapproval rating for this president, they're going to have their say too.
Well, President Trump's lawyer, Mark Kasowitz, said that after Comey's testimony, Trump believes he's in the clear. Can we take a listen to that?
The president feels completely vindicated and is eager to continue moving forward with his agenda, with the business of this country, and with this public cloud removed.
Steve, has Mr. Trump been vindicated?
Well, Democrats still exist, so of course he hasn't been vindicated, whether or not there's any there. I wonder if Trump realizes that, you know, statements by his attorneys tend to open more questions than answers. I don't know why that's a statement that Trump wouldn't have made himself instead of trotting his attorney out. That's kind of an example, again, of the difference between Trump, private company CEO. We talked about this the last time I was on. Trump being a private company CEO versus, you know, running government. I don't know why you trot your lawyer out. Speak yourself.
Eugene?
Well, I've always felt Trump is in a bubble. He is carrying over that whole CEO attitude where I say jump and everybody says how high, and that's the way he runs things. I think he basically just told his lawyer after it's all done, well, I could tweet that I'm vindicated, but if they see my lawyer doing it, that seems a lot more official. I really think he thinks on that level. And the weird thing to me is that he will say that he's totally and completely vindicated, and he's a guy who watches all of these news shows, and not just Fox. He watches MSNBC and CNN, and he knows everybody is saying he wasn't vindicated. So that's why it's amazing to me he will go so far to just appear out of touch with what the norm is for most people. Nobody's saying he's been totally and completely vindicated, and he must have known that.
It is the Week in Review. We're talking with Steve Prestigard. He's a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. And Eugene Kane is with us, former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're digging into the Week in Review, and we'll be heading across the pond in the next segment to get some reaction on British Prime Minister Theresa May's narrow victory. This is an evolving story, the hung parliamentary elections, evolving development. Where does it leave Brexit? And we'll revisit President Trump's travel ban after the recent London attacks. Does America need the travel ban? And what about Trump's clash with London's mayor? Join in 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll be back after a short break here on the Ideas Network. It's the Week in Review, and we're joined by Eugene Kane. He's a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Steve Prestigard, a journalist and blogger. Surprising news out of the UK this morning. We're watching it. The Conservative Party has lost its majority in the British Parliament, and leaders are calling on Theresa May to resign. The latest news is that she won't resign, and she's gone to visit Queen Elizabeth to seek permission to form a new government. And so before we go on to any further news here, let's take a call on that Theresa May development with going to Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello. I think the result shows that there's a Trump effect on European elections where Trump tweets about some terrorist incident and the people who maybe are indifferent to him suddenly dislike him a lot and go for the party that he does not support. And it happened in the French election. And it's now happened in the British election, and it will continue because Trump does unite and really inspire people who don't like him.
And Steve, President Trump and Theresa May had very amicable relations. Is this a blow to President Trump as well?
Well, it may well be a blow to Trump. I think it doesn't have a single thing to do with tweet. If you're a British voter, it is simply illogical for you to vote based on what Donald Trump thinks about the party you're voting for. That's just ridiculous, I think. What is not ridiculous is that in this campaign, which featured, if my understanding of the time is correct, two or three terrorist attacks taking place during the campaign, perhaps this was a vote by British voters against the way that Theresa May's government has been handling terrorism. Now, I don't think it's very logical either to, instead of, you know, if you think that the current government isn't doing the job, to go for the people who basically kind of have a surrender mentality about terrorism, and that would be the Labour Party. But I think that, you know, and I heard a little bit of analysis about this on the BBC yesterday, and they were kind of, they were still trying to figure out what in the world just happened. I think that, that, you know, once they do figure that out, it may well be a vote basically against her handling of these terrorist attacks that are now suddenly taking place in Britain over the last couple of months.
Mm. Eugene, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, just that it always seems to me when you look across the pond, as they say, it's really amazing how much of a parallel they sometimes can be with American politics, because here we have Theresa May, who's like the female candidate who is widely expected to win, and she gets upset, and that sort of, you know, kind of harkens to Hillary Clinton, although I don't know if May is actually the same type of politician that Hillary Clinton was. So my sense, I do agree with Steve that terrorism will probably have something to play for any nation that is undergoing elections at this time. So, and Trump might have something to do with it too, but I don't think I buy in whole hog with the caller theory about Trump, about the vote being basically, I guess, if I'm understanding him, an anti-Trump vote. So,
well, let's move on to last weekend's terrorist attacks in London. Three attackers rammed pedestrians on a bridge with a van and stabbed people at a market. Seven people have been confirmed killed, possibly an eighth, 50 others wounded. London police shot and killed all three terrorists. Eugene, what is your overall reaction to this attack?
Pretty much the same as it always is. It's being, you know, shocked. I feel a little sad because there doesn't really seem to be much you can do about these type of attacks. And, I mean, I don't, if I had an answer or a solution to it, I'm, you know, I would gladly offer it up. But, again, every time it happens, this one in particular, the nature of people just showing up in vehicles and hitting people and then just getting out and stabbing people, that takes it to another level. I mean, how are you really supposed to prepare for something like that?
Steve, what do you make of Saturday's attack?
Well, you know, and I understand it is amazingly politically incorrect to say that, or it's very politically incorrect to say this, but there is a war going on, and it is a war between the rest of the civilized world and radical Islam. And I know that nobody likes to say that because they think that it tars all of Islam under the same brush. But how can you make any other kind of conclusion from that? It is, I mean, this is three of them now in the last 2 months, I believe it is, in Britain. And they're not, you know, this is, as Eugene pointed out, you know, this is, they drive a vehicle and hit people, and then they start stabbing. It's not guns in this particular case. It's not bombs in this particular case. And, you know, I wonder when they figure out, when Britain figures out that there is a connection between a certain facet of a certain religion and all of these attacks. It's not anybody else that's doing this. It's not even, you know, what you'd more expect in Britain. It's not even, you know, like a Northern Ireland kind of conflict here. This is about radical Islam, and that is all this is about.
It is the Week in Review, and we are with Eugene Cain, a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Steve Prestigard, who is a journalist and blogger. I want to go on to the reaction of London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who told Londoners not to be alarmed with a stepped-up police presence in the city, and that prompted criticism from President Trump on Twitter. Khan said Trump's tweet deliberately took his comment out of context, by leaving out the part about the beefed up security and that he wasn't merely telling people right after the attack not to be alarmed. Steve, did Mr. Trump step in here, or is there some legitimacy to his response?
Well, I wonder if the voters feel that way, you know, based on the election results yesterday. But obviously, they were not necessarily specifically voting about, you know, in fact, they weren't voting about city of London government.
No. Mm-hmm.
You know, in the world of social media, apparently everybody is entitled to give an opinion about everything else, whether or not it actually is based on something, whether or not it helps, whether or not it's accurate. You know, I don't think in particular, I don't think that Trump's tweeting really has a whole lot of impact on London's collective attitude or the London mayor's collective attitude about it. But, you know, social media world, I guess.
And Eugene, what's your reaction to Trump's tweet criticizing the actions of Mayor Khan? How he dealt with his people.
We're getting to the point where it might be time for to do some kind of serious editing of his tweeting habit, because we're being laughed at around the world now. We've got this idiot Twitter in chief who is like just doing stuff that it is becoming part of. I think they said his tweets can be considered presidential statements or part of the Library of Congress. I mean, it's going to be very embarrassing because, again, social media is supposed to be superficial and unsubstantial, except when the guy doing it is the guy in the White House with his finger on the nuclear code. So I'm just amazed that we've come to accept that we've got this guy who will tweet as much as most, you know, teenage girls tweet, and usually with about as much substance. So I follow him. I'm always checking to see what he said next, but it's just such an amazing way to run a government.
Steve, he laid off Twitter yesterday during Comey's testimony.
Well, good. I still maintain that somebody ought to find a hammer for his cell phone. And you know, and this, I know, drives Republicans nuts also, because he's just, you know, he just kind of refuses to adhere to standards that, and you know, Twitter particularly, which Twitter is literally the least mature social media out there. But, you know, again, it's the role of social media. There are people actually eat this stuff up, apparently, including the Donald.
But I'll say one thing in terms of the current mode we're in. There could be a war coming. There could be something, an international crisis, and we've got a president who's going to tweet off the top of his head. Even this thing he said about the London mayor, he twisted his words, took them out of context. That could start an international incident with some other person. So, I mean, it's not really as light and fluffy as we try to make it out.
Well, that depends if you take seriously what he says. And, you know, obviously, I think we've known for about ever since he started running for election that the trick with Trump is to pay attention to the last thing that he said on any particular issue. You might remember back in the campaign where he had, three different positions on abortion rights in 5 hours or something like that. The thing is Eugene is exaggerating, I suspect, because he does, and one of the reasons why Republicans do support Trump to the extent that they do is the people who are actually, you know, General Mattis, the defense secretary, and others who they, I think, have a whole lot more confidence in than the person who is their top boss.
Well, let's take a call on this right now. AJ in Appleton. Hi, AJ. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I just get blown away with our hypocrisy sometimes. We just spent a whole week waiting for the director of the FBI to go in front of Congress and talk about really matters of foreign powers interfering with elections and governing here in the United States. And now the conversation is about our president of the United States tweeting, which perhaps has an influence on another country's election. It's just amazing to me that that's what we're talking about. I'll just leave that right there.
What do you see, AJ, before you go, what do you see amazing about that? Let me have a little more there.
It's just our hypocrisy generally as Americans. We do play a role in other elections around the world. We may not talk about it on any of the news networks, but I can tell you as a veteran and studying history, especially Central and South America the past 125 years, we've been involved with all of that, and we never talk about that. And here we are, right here in our face, our president tweets about other countries and how they are handling things at the time of their elections. It's just amazing to me. We have to stop, and we have to be honest with ourselves about what we do.
Eugene?
Well, I mean, you can make a fortune writing about the hypocrisy of American government, politics, whatever, society. I just think what gets lost in this discussion with Trump is that he basically, that there's a concern about Russia, whether you want to say hacking or unduly influencing our election, and he just seems totally unconcerned, and it's starting to look like through various investigations, that's because he and his team had had inroads to Russia even before they took office. Now, just from a purely, you know, presidential standpoint, this kind of stuff can't be allowed to happen. So even though Trump is tweeting about other places, he never seems that concerned about the fact that the real question is about interference in another country's election is what Russia did to ours. And strangely, he's got so many people in his cabinet who had had all these secretive meetings with Russians. I think it is kind of important to talk about that and not get distracted by just his tweeting.
Let's go to Ann now in Green Bay. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. Well, Steve, you just said something about President Trump's tweeting and how, you know, whether we should take him serious or not. The man is the president of the United States. If we can't take him serious, who can we take seriously?
Steve?
Well, I got a good answer for that. And my answer is that we have, and Trump supporters, clearly the caller is not one of them, Trump supporters have elevated Trump to this worship-like level, the same way that Barack Obama's supporters did, the same way that Bill Clinton's supporters did, and so on. Donald Trump, to be 100% honest about it, is an excellent argument for smaller government every time he opens his mouth. And I say that as somebody who quite obviously doesn't vote for Democrats very often, but again, didn't vote for Trump. And that's one of the reasons why there are a lot of Republicans that don't support Trump, because there is really not very much about him other than, for instance, getting a correct Supreme Court justice out there and actually having the correct position about radical Islam. But there's not very much about Donald Trump that is about smaller governments. And, you know, we would be amazingly better off if people stopped fixating over who lives in, at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue or in the governor's mansion in Madison, and actually focus on things that affect their own lives much more than our president tweeting.
Well, AJ and Ann, thank you so much for your comments. We're going to pivot a bit here. Vice President Mike Pence will be in Milwaukee tomorrow to discuss health care. Pence has been holding a series of Obamacare events as the Senate works on its own version of a repeal and replace bill. Eugene, are Republicans going to get something done, or is that unlikely?
I don't really think they'll get much done. I've always held that, you know, Obamacare needs to be improved, not repealed and replaced. And it's also disingenuous for these politicians to act like they can really do anything to repeal or replace Obamacare, because any plan they come up with ends up knocking millions of people out of health care. And I don't think we're yet at the point where a country can do that, mainly because all those people who get knocked off of health care will vote and will know exactly which party did that. So Pence, he can come. I think Pence is one of the least effective vice presidents we'll probably have in a generation, although we might have to wait until Trump gets impeached and he becomes president, Pence. But at this point, he's just like, you know, this sort of like supporting cast of a major star who gets sent around to various places to attract attention. I guess that's my way of answering and saying I don't think there's really going to be anything done on health care in a foreseeable future, because these guys, they've been talking about repealing it for like 20 years or something. Well, not that long, because it hasn't been in effect that long. But they've been talking about this for years and don't have anything in place. That speaks volumes to me.
Steve, Pence on health care, thoughts from you?
Well, certainly nothing's going to be decided tomorrow. I mean, you know, it's... And by the way, Eugene's statement about Pence is different from every previous vice president in what sense? They're all supporting Kass, and they're all far, you know, down, despite the fact that, you know, Pence is allegedly a heartbeat or a really bad tweet away from the presidency. Of course, Trump is not going to get impeached. But, you know, the politics still is, you still have a lot of people in the GOP who believe that the simple answer is to repeal Obamacare, period, because the government should not be involved in health care for the so-called average person. Then you also have people who think that that Obamacare needs to be fixed, and I would admit, I would argue that the first is correct, that we would be much better off if we had the ability to simply go out and buy health insurance instead of, you know, a system that has resulted in spiraling upward health insurance premiums, people actually losing their coverage, which wasn't supposed to happen. Remember that part about you, if you like your doctor, you get to keep your doctor? You're talking about Trump lying? Well, that was an obvious lie also. However, politically here is that with all this other stuff going on in Washington, it is probably distracting the Republicans as it is from being able to come up with a solution, particularly since they can't decide whether, you know, between fixing and just getting rid of it.
And Eugene, Mr. Trump has called Democrats obstructionists when it comes to health care reform. What do you make of that label?
Because he hates Obamacare because it's got the name of the first black president who came up with a national health care plan. And he just basically, I think in his mind, it's a bad thing, and if he can get rid of it, that's going to be sort of like his legacy. But all the information they're using is just wrong. It's completely wrong to me. Paul Ryan, every day, he says some kind of thing about death spiral of insurance companies and the insurance premiums hitting the roof. I don't know what part of America a lot of these folks live in, but I live in a part where Obamacare has done some great things in terms of getting people for the first time to get a doctor, to get regular checkups, to do all kind of things. And the politicians who are looking to destroy Obamacare, they've been exposed by this last go-around when they came up with this bogus plan that really would just make things worse. So for them to constantly follow Trump with this attitude that, well, we've got to do something about health care, and again, to Steve's point about whether the government should be involved, I would be perfectly fine with this nation doing what other very powerful nations all across the globe do, which provides some kind of universal health care. This is the only place where people start getting into this, well, why is government even into health care, as though they can't understand what the benefit would be of having a government that looked out after the health of most or a lot of its citizens. So I'm just at a loss where I see the attack on Obamacare is more an attack on the legacy of President Obama, which many of these Republicans, they just basically hated him and never wanted to see him succeed. So this is their revenge in a sense.
Steve, before we go to break here, any last thoughts on that note?
Yeah, I don't know what planet Eugene is on talking about the benefits of Obamacare, because literally everybody that I know has had to deal with spiraling upward increases in premiums. They have lost the ability to go to the doctor that they choose. That is the legacy of Obamacare, and that would be the case if Barack Obama was of mixed race, white, or a woman, or anything else. To play the race card is ridiculous. Republicans don't like Obamacare because it was bad law, period.
It's the Week in Review with our guests, Eugene Kane, former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Steve Prestigard, a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. When we come back, we'll explore what's happening in the Wisconsin Assembly as Republicans can't see eye to eye on the state budget. Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Joy. Back in a moment here on The Idea Network. Welcome back to the Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Joy Cardine. Our guests, Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com, and Eugene Kane is a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Returning to state politics now, and you can add your voice at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the Assembly's plan to provide less money to schools but allow lower spending districts to hike property taxes? Are you for or against tolling along the state the border to help pay for roads, bridges, and infrastructure? Join in 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Republican lawmakers may not get on the same page with regard to the state budget until next week. Apparently, at the earliest, the Senate met yesterday to discuss their ideas for the budget. The Assembly Majority Leader, Jim Steinke, said he'd wait to see what comes out of the meeting, then get together with Senate leaders early next week. The two legislative chambers, they're at odds over how to fund education, how to fund transportation, and a couple other issues. Steve, let's start with you. Are you hopeful that all will end well with what is happening here with this disagreement among the GOP?
Hopeful? Well, obviously they will come to an agreement at some point. They have to, because that's the law. They are required by, required is not exactly accurate. The drop-dead deadline, if you want to call it that, is July 1st, because June 30th is the end of the fiscal year. However, unlike other states and the federal government, if they don't reach a budget agreement by June 30th, then they keep spending at the old rate until the new budget is passed. There is, as is usual with politics, there is less happening here than people think there is. It is, it's interesting to note that, you know, you have Republican control of the Assembly, you have a Republican control of the Senate, and you have a Republican governor, and yet they don't necessarily all see, you know, eye to eye on things. And I, you know, for all of those people who think that the Republican Party is a monolith in the state, well, it's really not. But there are actual, you know, differences between what Scott Walker wants to do, which is give school districts a larger amount of money than the Assembly wants to, because, of course, Walker is going to be running for re-election next year. Difference also between certain parts of the Assembly wanting to enact tolling, which I think would be enormously unpopular in this state, and a really dumb idea, versus what Walker wants to do, which is to fund less transportation. So, it is interesting that this is essentially a one-party state in state government at the moment, but there are differences of opinion in there.
And Eugene, what would you like to see Democrats do while Republicans hash out their differences here?
Well, clearly, they're not going to be able to do anything because they don't have any control. I mean, to play the race card again, as Steve said, we're talking mainly about predominantly white politicians, a lot of them from outside Milwaukee. They're dealing with issues that are of concern to African-Americans in the state, but they don't have any representation that's pushing their agenda. It's weird to me that a state could do anything in an area of jobs or education and not have minority legislators involved. But I can blame the Democrats themselves for being kind of ineffective. But clearly what's happening is that this is a Republican-controlled legislature, Republican governor. There's a gang that can't shoot straight on a lot of issues. Walker is gearing up to run again. So he's doing stuff that has really nothing to do with government, like requiring Medicaid folks to be drug tested. And he knows that will appease, that's red meat for his base. Because, again, a lot of his base are people who don't really have much attachment to the problems and the social, you know, ills of cities like Milwaukee. And when you talk state government to me, that's all I see. bunch of white folks cutting up things for themselves and leaving black and brown people behind. So that's a very pessimistic view. But it's not that much different than the way government runs in a lot of other states either.
Well, let's take education here for a moment. Steve, Assembly Republicans rolled out this alternative plan for funding education. It would give schools $90 million less than what Governor Walker is proposing, but it would allow lower spending schools to make up the difference by raising property taxes. And in the end, property tax bills on a median valued home would go up about $10. Walker and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald both said that's not going to fly with them. So, Steve, you know, how should the state be funding the public school system?
Well, let's keep a couple of things in mind. First off, I can tell you for a fact that this is rather disruptive for school districts throughout the state, in the sense that regardless of whether education is funded at Walker's level or this Assembly Republican plan that's just kind of come up, school districts are in the process of getting their budgets in order for the next school year, which for basically all school districts starts July 1st. And there have been a lot of school districts that have not been able to figure out what they're going to be able to spend because the Assembly and the Senate and the governor don't have an agreement on all of that. But remember also that when the Assembly Republicans are talking about something that's going to increase property taxes have been the number one least popular tax literally longer than the state has existed. Every single, the creation of the income tax was to get less property taxes. The creation of the sales tax and its increases over the years have been to reduce property taxes. Now, of course, as always is the case, none of that has taken place. Property taxes haven't been cut. But I just think it's politically silly for Assembly Republicans to come up with a plan that is going to increase property taxes, because that's not why people vote for Republicans. They didn't vote for Scott Walker in 2010 and 2014 to see Republicans increase property taxes.
Eugene, any thoughts on the proposals for funding education?
Well, again, I see a lot of stuff coming from Walker, Governor Walker, who's planning, who will probably, well, I'm pretty sure he's going to run for governor again, but I think he still, in his mind, has even higher things in mind. So I'm skeptical of all of his motivations for things that he does. The education thing, again, in Milwaukee, we've got a decimated public school system, but we've also got this school choice plan that splits money. And now Walker, that's one of his things he wants to take to the entire state, where, to even provide, private schools for people who can afford it, which is going against what school choice was always about when it was created by predominantly African-American educators in Milwaukee. So, again, I'm just not – I look at everything he does, the governor does, with a certain eye, because I see him as just – Steve is right. They didn't vote for him twice to do some of the stuff he's doing now, but they didn't vote for him to suddenly decide to run for president of the United States in 2016 either. But –
Well, let's move on now to tolls, and let's take a call now. David in Black River Falls. Hi, David.
Yes. How are you doing there?
I'm well. Go ahead.
Let me point this out, Joe. Any person, white or black, any Republican or Democrat, I drive trucks, and I can tell you right here and now, I do not like tolls on roads. And any of you idiots that will think that way for once in your life, thinking that taking a road and tolling it is going to make your state a lot of money, you got another thing coming, because you mostly outsource those tolls to companies, and anyways, they make the money, and we don't make anything. So basically, any more toll roads, I just do not want them. I think open road should be open road, and that will even impact a person who wants to go camping. Anybody out there who wants to go camping on that road cannot go down that road without being told.
Well, David,
that also takes away the recreational. I can see people riding around with their little boats and stuff like that. What would a person tolling a boat around, having to pay a toll every 5 or 10 miles, is going to go out and to do recreational? That's different.
Well, David, thank you so much for your call. Steve, Governor Walker laid out a framework this week for accepting Wisconsin's first ever use of tolling. He said it would have to bring in money from out-of-state drivers, truck drivers over long roads, then the use of that money to lower the gas tax for Wisconsin residents. Senator Alberta Darling, who co-chairs the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, said there's no consensus among GOP senators to set up tolls. Tolls. Does that sound like a good idea, or would you rather not see them go there?
No, I do not favor tolling. I don't think there's a lot of people in Wisconsin who do either. Now, the caller mentioned something that I don't think is quite accurate in the sense that, you know, they're not talking about setting up toll booths. They would be talking about transponders like they have in Illinois for, you know, the Illinois I-Pass. However, as a trucker, I think the caller should appreciate this. If you think you're going to, you know, nail people coming up from Illinois to vacation in Wisconsin for tolls, you know who else you're going to nail? Trucks that are carrying goods and products to sell in Wisconsin. So what tolls are going to do is going to increase the cost of doing business. And by the way, businesses don't pay taxes. Businesses' customers do. So tolls in Wisconsin are basically an invitation for businesses to raise prices. And we saw what happened with that back in 2008 when we had gas at $4 a gallon and diesel fuel at $5 a gallon. That spiraled up the cost of everything, particularly increasing food. And I cannot believe the Republicans think that making the cost of what we buy more expensive by tolls is really a good idea. It's not.
Quickly, Eugene, tolls, how do you feel?
Well, I enjoy hearing him speak on that, the caller, because he really seemed like a very authentic voice about a subject that a lot of times just gets discussed, you know, by journalists and politicians, and you never hear from the real, actual people. So I was hoping that he was in his cab and could blow the horn for us there. That would have been a great, you know, capper to that conversation. But yeah,
isn't that distracted driving?
I've lived in Wisconsin a long time, and I've never, you know, seen why we would need more tolls. So, you know, to me, I don't see it as a Wisconsin type of a thing, if that makes any sense.
Very quickly here, as we wrap up, the mayor of Madison said he may, Paul Soglin, throw his hat in the ring to run against Governor Scott Walker 2018. What do you think, Steve?
I know Scott Walker would love to run against Paul Soglin. And since we don't have much time, I will simply say, because I'm blogging on this Monday, Paul Soglin as a Democratic candidate for governor would be a target-rich environment. So that's all I'll say about that.
Eugene.
Go Soglin. I think we're at a point in Wisconsin politics where you need kind of like a real shift, a real massive earthquake to shake things up. And who knows, if Trump can be a president, Paul Soglin could be the next governor of Wisconsin. We'll say it. I'll say it here now.
Well, thank you, too, for joining us. Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. And Eugene Kane is a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Brianne Chasseau. Cynthia Schuster had technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for the Joy Cardine Show. Have a great weekend, everybody, and stay with us here on the Ideas Network.